there's ways that we grow together, but sometimes it's actually the way that we practice individually that makes us a better unit. And I think right now what I'm finding in a lot of my work, when I can provoke an emotion or something in the people that see my drawings, is what's the individual work that you're doing? And if you're not, how can you get there if you need it? Because you can't wait for someone to give you permission. We already know what happens when we wait for that permission. It doesn't come. You got to give it to yourself.
This is Brand Story, a podcast featuring in-depth conversations with leaders, marketers, and brand storytellers about their professional journey and the impact they are making on the world around them. Welcome to Brand Story. I'm your host, Steve Gilman, and my guest today is Wade Forbes. Wade is the co-founder and chief illustration officer of Red Tail Communications. And at Red Tail, Wade is a sketchnote artist and a graphic recorder, which means he uses artistic talent to help people tell stories through visual storytelling. It's much more than that. I'll let him explain it. Welcome, Wade.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I really appreciate being on here.
Yeah, it's really going to be really fun to talk with you. I was really looking forward to this because I follow you on LinkedIn. I see your sketch a day. I've seen your work. And you are such a great visual storyteller. And it is a, you know, for us and for the podcast and for what we do for a living, we're storytellers. That's all I really care about is other people's stories. And I love how you tell yours. So for people who can't picture what you do, can you kind of describe what a graphic recorder or a sketchnote artist is? Because it's not your average profession.
Yeah, I was introduced to this field probably close to 5 years ago now. And I'd say there's maybe hundreds of us in the world, not thousands. And it's a technique that's been around for about 40 years. And you're basically taking visual notes that help keep people in the moment while it's happening, and then something that they can look at later and say, oh yeah, that's right, Steve and Wade were talking about this 3 weeks ago. I liked how that sounded, or hey, that didn't come out the way I wanted it to. Let me work on that. Let me reflect on that some more. So you go into this really neat zone of listening and writing and drawing at the same time simultaneously. So it's left brain, right brain going on, and you're basically so in tune with the voices you're hearing that you go into this different place. And when I learned about this, I was a little intimidated at first because I said, how will I set up, you know, these huge sheets that I use, and how will I make sure I draw the right thing? And the imposter syndrome is there, and you're worried it's not going to look right. But then you just see the reactions of people when they see their ideas coming to life. And I'd say that's probably the number one reason to do it, is because you can tap in to yourself as the artist, but also into the people that are talking when they see that maybe what they did say or what they thought was beautiful or had some meaning, or if it didn't, how do they get there? And so it's been a wonderful journey going from sitting at a desk doing cybersecurity consulting with the military for 17 years to drawing when my bosses didn't have time to read what I wrote. I said, how can I get somebody's attention for this idea or this concept? And I found a really neat way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that is quite a career transition to go from where you were, and then especially that industry, and then all of a sudden you're a sketch artist. So it really did come out of trying to get people to hear your message then.
I have always been a creative, but I wasn't being guided very well as an art major. You know, they said, you could be an art teacher, Wade. And I said, I don't want to be an art teacher. And so I did a little bit of elementary school teaching. I actually have a theater degree when I realized I didn't want to be an art teacher. So I did theater for a little while professionally for probably about 6 months, and I changed my mind. So while I was elementary school teaching, I met a consultant. She brought me in on her team, and I was doing commercial competitor research for outsourcing deals so that you found the right vendor. And a friend of mine in orientation said, Wade, could you do that same research for the military using the internet? Because we're all traditionally trained to do a lot of the same things, which is good and bad. And they brought me in as a disruptor because I hadn't been in the military and I had a different journey than they did. So I'm really fortunate that I had people believe in what I could do creatively. And then I found my way back to art at the beginning of the pandemic because I lost my position on a contract and we all couldn't, because I had a clearance and I couldn't go back into the buildings I was working in. And here we are.
That's amazing. By the way, I have to rewind a little bit and talk to you about your theater degree, because I was a theater directing major and also toured with an improv group for years and trained improvers and directed plays and did all those things. And I think, you know, I studied that in marketing. and then put those two together, which is why I think of everything as storytelling. But it's really interesting. You're doing sort of art improv in some ways. You have to be truly in the moment to do what you do.
Theater taught me to be a chameleon, Steve, where I could blend into these different casts. Because you know, once you realize the divas don't help anybody, you know, it's really about the ensemble, you can go into any environment and find your role, your talent, your skill, and enhance somebody else's performance. And so I have these great moments with speakers where they see their talk coming to life. And I'm thinking, this is just me being the supporting actor. It's not my ideas. It's not my words. It's theirs. But you have to humble yourself. If you're the director and I'm the actor and you give me a note, I have to have my pad and pen ready and say, thank you, Steve, write it down and say, if I don't listen to Steve, there's a bunch of other 6 foot redheads that are 200 pounds that'll come in and take this part. So it's about being in the moment with other people and not making it about you. And that's perhaps the hardest part about drawing, because people get so excited and they want to look at it and they say these nice things. And I say, wait a second, this was us. Not just me, not just you, us. And that's why it's beautiful.
That's really cool. I think that comes through in your work because, you know, a lot of artists, I think they'd have a hard time doing what you do because they might get an idea and want everyone to slow down so they can sketch out their idea. And you're somehow incorporating what you're able to do at a pace that I think a lot of artists would find impossible and capture the essence of what people are trying to communicate. So it's pretty amazing. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because in some ways you're like a human translation camera. What you're doing is insane in some ways. And it's super cool because I think, you know, we've all been to meetings. We've all had retreats where someone gets up and writes a ton of words. And who remembers a giant paragraph of words? Not a lot. There's a lot of times you leave those things, you don't remember anything. But I've noticed with the, you know, some of the work that you've shared, I wasn't even at the meeting and I remember it. So it's really interesting. Kind of goes back to that picture is 1,000 words thing. So how do you feel like, how is it so much more effective for the people? Because you have people hiring you to do this, companies that maybe have never done it before. What are the results like? What do people get out of it?
Well, so people right now are finally reaching for what they want. You know, I think before the pandemic, we were a little more reserved. We kept our mouths shut. But now people are really craving the experiential. So it's a great time in our lives to see something that says, hey, maybe we shouldn't spend so much money on where we go for the retreat. Maybe we should make an investment in the visual so we remember. So I had a client tell me I was a meeting memory maker, and he felt really corny saying it. But if we're going to gather and we're going to make that investment with, I mean, I've drawn for meetings with 10 people. I've drawn for conventions with 20,000. If you're going to gather all those people in one place, how do you kind of put the price on the memory and say, are we going to pick this up in 3 months, 6 months, 5 years and remember, there we were, July 2023, Steve, this is what we met. This is what we talked about. Was it worth it? Was it worth spending our heartbeats together? You and I were talking about grief in our warm-up. We only have so much time on this earth. Was it worth it? And I think more people are starting to kind of trace that back and say, yeah, I want to make this time worth it when I'm in this meeting. Let me do something different. Let me do this for my team. So one of the best scenarios, honestly, is when people say, I want to give my team something special. I want to give this leader something special. Maybe they're retiring and there's a legacy that's been left. So there's really no scenario where it doesn't work. You know, I've done this in churches, I've done this for corporate, I've done it for schools, I've done it for career days. Everybody can get something out of it. And the best is when people start to say, I saw what you did, I'm trying it myself, here it is. I mean, more doodlers are coming up to me and showing me their pads and they're saying, check it out. And that's utopia, because all of us have that in us naturally as children, and it's harnessing that again as adults, which is critical.
I mean, it's hard to get in touch with that in yourself and tell yourself you give yourself permission to do it. So I think it's amazing that you've given yourself permission to do it. And I think it's really interesting that, you know, it's very emotional because, you know, what you're capturing from the drawings I've seen, even if it's a meeting, if you think of a corporate meeting being emotional, it's maybe not the first thing everyone would think of. But you're capturing impressions of what was being communicated. And that's different than a video. And that's different than notes. It's like a completely different world, you know, where you're capturing these visual impressions that have emotional content and trying to translate that so that people can remember what it felt like to be there. So what's your process? How do you manage that? Because that's a lot to try to do as fast as you do it.
Thank you for appreciating that. I was trained by Stacy Hall, who has a company called Doodle Tunes, and another friend named Brian Torello, who has a company called Lizard Brain. And they teach you what a 10-minute Spider-Man looks like, a 1-minute Spider-Man, and a 10-second Spider-Man. So like if I had to web you right now and I was turning my fist upside down with these two fingers tucked in and I'm webbing you, that might be all I get for my 10 seconds. And then I have to move on. So you, over time, get this visual vocabulary, which is really fun because in the right environments, you can teach these industries their visual vocabulary so that they can find that comfort, as you said a moment ago, or give themselves permission to start drawing those things out. And once you've done a hand a certain way so many times, or once you've done a face or a mouth yelling or a frown, or, you know, sometimes I'll do an emotion of a mouth that's open, either yelling something great or something mean or something frustrating, depending on what it is, you can get that done pretty quickly. And then it's just a question of, okay, wait, do the words and then draw the mouth around it so the words don't spill out of the mouth. Like that becomes the hard thing. It's just doing things in the right order, getting the quote and then leaving that space sometimes, going back to it later and putting lips on it is where things get really fluid.
That is so cool. And I think what's fascinating about this art form is that you're sort of at the intersection of art and communication and helping people remember, you know, salient information from a meeting or from what the reason they're gathering, but also leaving them with an impression of how it felt and what it meant. And the thing that I find fascinating about it, being a storyteller myself, is that I think people don't need as much information to remember something as everyone thinks they do. You know, usually what happens with communicators of all sorts is that we hit people with everything in the kitchen sink. And you don't, because you don't have time. So you're capturing the essence and then trusting the viewer will get it. And I've yet to see one of your drawings that I don't immediately understand. So I'm not sure why all of us think that we need so much information to get something, because we're pretty intuitive beings. So you have a drawing a day on LinkedIn that you do. They're notes, but they're fascinating little drawings. And sometimes you explain kind of what's going on with you. And other times, you know, it's left for the audience to interpret. Can you tell me where you got that idea, why you started doing it, and what it means to you?
So every time I tell this, I feel like the story gets a little crisper. So thank you for asking. So these post-it notes started probably back in early 2019. I was working at a military base and I walk into the coffee shop every day. And have you ever been in a situation where people are all rushing to get someplace and they leave themselves a minute and 45 seconds to go order a coffee and rush there? And then it's your fault if you're the barista and you have a line of 50 people out the door. So there I am, I'm in this coffee shop and I just see things that were really tense and it bothered me. And I said, you know, we're doing these very worldly things in the cybersecurity work that I was doing. How do I do something right here to fix this situation? So I went upstairs and I got a post-it note and I drew a quote on it that made me feel good. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was something about Mark Twain, something he said. And I drew it and I put it on my coffee mug. And I went back downstairs and I waited in line for 50 people and handed it across to the barista. And I ordered my medium coffee with cream and sugar and a shot of espresso. And something really interesting happened. The 8 people working there stopped what they were doing, stood and looked at my quote. They smiled. They said things like, I never dreamt that I'd work in a coffee shop here and that it's a very humbling experience for me. I'm taking care of an aging family member. I'm a single parent putting myself through school. I'm waiting for another job to come along. I'm going through some mental health stuff. And so all this sharing happened. And I said, this was big. And they put it on the top of their register and they left it there. And I started doing it every day. And I'd go back, and once they filled the back office of all these quotes, the real magic happened, Steve, when they started putting them on the outsides of the machines. But now the people that are really pissed off and taking out their day on these strangers behind the counter started seeing it, and they talked about their dreams, and they talked about what was going on, and they started to have empathy. And then the world stopped with COVID. And I got home, and I, fear, uncertainty, and doubt was taking over my world. I was scared. I was nervous. I didn't see it. Like, I would go pick up food and stand in the kebabs place, and CNN looked like, you know, an apocalypse had occurred, and we were all just waiting for like it to wash over our community. And I said, I don't see hope where I need to see it. And I started drawing these quotes here in my house, and I filled up my kitchen wall, and they started to fall off. And my wife said, we have to figure out what to do with these post-it notes. And the irony in what she said was, I had to figure out how to get them into the world. And I started putting them on social media. And one of the first ones I did, it was an ant holding a barbell. And it said, the beginning is always the hardest. And I must have gotten 3,000 views on LinkedIn. And I, at the time, I had about 250 connections. I didn't know anybody. I'd never been on there because I didn't use social media in my previous roles. And these little post-it notes turned into this daily experience where, instead of commuting an hour each way to work, I channeled that into my self-care. And I said, what's one thing I can do each day to generate hope inside me? And then if it goes well, create that ripple effect. Because for you and I to sit here right now and list all the ways things could go wrong, it's a really long list. But for you and I to list all the ways things could go right, it's a shorter list. And I said, over time, if we have hope, how does that list get longer and longer? And the bigger list of all the ways it could go wrong gets shorter and shorter. So that was born in the practice of these daily post-it notes. And when I had a mass of about a few hundred of them, I put them into seasonal journals and I started selling some. And I'm a horrible salesperson. I was much better at drawing than I am at selling. But I've got these journals that people buy, and I've done workshops where people just take time to reflect. And now I've got about 800 or 900 of them. And the plan is a rip-off calendar, you know, and maybe a poster or something. But I was an artist with no portfolio. That bothered me. And I said, I don't have time to make huge paintings. So I made these little post-it notes, and now everything is in motion.
That's such an accessible art form too, the post-it note. I feel like it's like you channeled something that's so mundane that we all interact with and made it beautiful and made it communicate something.
Oh, thank you.
And that's why I'm hooked on watching the ones that you post. I mean, I think a lot of people are. So we'll put in your episode, on your landing page, we're going to put a link, of course, to your LinkedIn. And I implore everyone that's listening to go follow Wade, because the drawing he does every day will often make your day, or it'll make you think.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, they're all really touching and or motivational or reflective. I mean, they're everything, you know. It's beautiful work, man. And you're doing it over time, so it's really cool. You see, like, you get a sense of you get a sense of your experience, you certainly get a sense of your talent. And that story of what you did in that coffee shop, man, that's beautiful. That made my day. I'm so glad. I had no idea, and I'm so glad I got to talk to you about that. I worked my way through college and paid for my college by waiting tables. And so I was in the service industry for years and years. And when you're invisible to other human beings and all they want is what they want and you don't matter, if you've been in the service industry, you've experienced that. So whenever I'm in a Starbucks or I'm somewhere, I always try to sincerely actually thank people for what they just did for me. And not in some big overblown way, but I just want to make sure that they know I saw them. And you did that, and I feel like you did it in this really cool, contagious way. And that's pretty neat, man. Keep it up.
I've got good news. When my wife and I started to venture out, you know, midway through the pandemic, when we'd been vaccinated and felt a little more comfortable, my parents are in their 80s, so we didn't do a lot of going out. We were home most of the time. I started drawing on napkins for servers. And so for you to share that story, unbeknownst to knowing that I was doing this for servers, I would, you know, and I post some of my napkin art, but I've had people keep a napkin that I drew for them for 30 years, 35, you know, and now you're looking at, like, when we have talents. I mean, you have talents right now that you don't take for granted, but you don't think about, when you're delivering them to others, because it comes naturally to you. Just like I don't think about drawing on a napkin and how naturally that comes to me. And I think when you give something to somebody that's tangible and they keep it, it's that reminder that you have to package up. One of the journals I created was with a friend, Megan Jaffer, and she and I were talking about time in our career in 2015 when things were going really, really well. We were getting awards, we were getting nominated for things at our company, I'd gotten a promotion, and all we did was look over our shoulder for the other shoe to fall. And we wasted this time of goodness because we thought, well, this can't last. And the journal we created together was called All the Small Things. And it was a place where you could write those great things that happened to you and remember that. Because if I insulted you today on this podcast, you'd remember it verbatim for a decade. But if I said something really nice to you, you would botch it in 3 weeks, and ultimately it would slip away, because we're trained to remember the horrible stuff. And if we're lucky, we can squeeze in that really awesome thing that happened to us or somebody else.
It's definitely a state for human beings to see the negative or focus on the negative. And, you know, people use it against us in the media. People use it against us in politics and in many different ways. Is that sort of bias to protect ourselves from hurt. And, you know, I think one of my favorite sayings that sort of goes along with what you were saying, it's related, is that fear is a liar. So that looking over your shoulder for the other shoe to drop is basically us just trying to control our fear that something might happen to us or we might lose something. But 9 times out of 10, your fear is just lying to you. Unless a tiger is chasing you, it's probably just a lie. And I had a great friend that told me that, and I swear to God, it changed my perspective in so many ways. Because I'll feel myself getting afraid of, like, you know, situational things like that. I've run my own company for 29 years. So, you know, there's tons you can be afraid of. But you approach life, you approach everyone differently if you're coming from a place of fear instead of a place of generosity or a place of just calmness, you know? So good for you, man. That's super cool. So you've mentioned grief and loss a couple of times, and we talked about it at the top of this. And I know you've recently gone through something because you're very transparent about it on LinkedIn. And I think I admire that. How's it going with you? And I know that is a really complex experience. And how has your art helped you kind of, you know, travel through some of this journey?
So I think a little bit about this each day. The grief, but also I started my self-care practice probably 1,400 days ago. And I refer to it now, actually maybe not that much, maybe 1,200 days ago. But in December of 2022, I called it the Great Undoing. It took me 1,005 days, Steve, to undo that pressure that while I was drawing every day, I should be doing something productive or profitable. Because if I wasn't, I was letting somebody down. And in that undoing, now when I have this grief that's so intense and difficult and can come on in a moment's notice and then leave just as quickly as it came, I've got this great practice that I do every single day where I draw something that makes me feel wonderful, that helps me practice drawing people and different fleshes other than my white hand that I drew for most of my life. I get to do all this practice and I get to curate these quotes. And so I think people look for self-care and they don't keep at it when they need it most. So if you're fortunate enough to find a practice that you can commit to and do every day and make time for, I have to shut my family out of this room I'm in. I say, look, I just need an hour. And sometimes if it's a really complicated drawing, my family say, hey, it's been an hour and 20 minutes. But sometimes I just need an hour to sit with my thoughts. And in doing that, I can express that emotion. I can be vulnerable. I can talk about my grief. This morning, I was bawling my eyes out. I just was having a really tough time. And that's okay. You know, I've found clients that say, hey, wait, if you need to take a knee, I know you're going through a tough time. And I said, I appreciate that because drawing is so soothing to me. And when I'm not doing it is when I really sometimes can feel these really huge waves of emotion that are hard for me to wrestle with. So I think the moral of the story is if you have self-care in your life, you never know when it's going to be really valuable to you or you're going to need it most. And the real challenge is not abandoning it when the things get really hard, because it's working for a reason.
God, that's a beautiful message, man. I'm glad it's helping you travel, you know, this road. Grief is a journey. You know, those of us that have been through it, it never really goes away. It just, you know, changes over time, perhaps, you know, and that's the best I've ever figured out. And, you know, I think the point you make about self-care, you know, it's a little like meditation. You know, I've meditated for years, and you don't do it the day you need it, you know? Like, that's not when it's going to help you, you know, regulate, you know, like being able to regulate your own emotions, be able to, you know, feel calm, not because you, you know, are getting upset easily, just because, you know, it's a nice state to exist in. You get to take in information a little bit more thoroughly and react a little more appropriately to how you want to react. And I think, you know, a lot of people think self-care is for when you're having a hard time. Like, okay, I just worked myself to death and now I'll do self-care on a Saturday for 2 hours. And I'm not sure that works. So that doesn't hurt, but I'm not sure it works.
I mean, there's never a convenient time to discover those things about yourself. And it's the daily repetition, I think. You know, I said earlier in this conversation, a lot of little things add up to something great. You know, it wasn't one big day. You know, even in the DEI work that I get to do with some groups where I'm very reflective, you know, I was working with a client about a year and a half ago and they had a DEI program. There were 40 people in the room, one woman, one black male, and 38 white males. And I had to reflect back to them and say, I don't think your DEI program is in the direction you need it to go yet. And that's because I'd sat and listened to hundreds of hours of people that are kind of wrestling with this thing. And I tried to say to them, look, you need to make that time to reflect and really see what's inside yourself before you can convey a message and maybe do a workshop for 8 hours and then expect these really, really, really big results. It's a little bit over time that's going to help you a little bit each day. And some of those places where we're expecting to grow are those individual journeys more than they are a group journey. But if you and I are talking about sports, there's ways that we grow together, but sometimes it's actually the way that we practice individually that makes us a better unit. And I think right now what I'm finding in a lot of my work, when I can provoke an emotion or something in the people that see my drawings, is what's the individual work that you're doing? And if you're not, how can you get there if you need it? Because you can't wait for someone to give you permission. We already know what happens when we wait for that permission. It doesn't come. You got to give it to yourself.
That's beautiful, man. I think that really meaningful. And I think, you know, everyone is at a different spot and giving themselves permission to take care of themselves. People have a really hard time with that. So I know you've been through a lot of change and you've had a lot going on and, you know, your work is really successful and, you know, you've got a very rich life. But what would you, at this moment, what would you name this chapter of your life?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's a great question. I think I'm still in my reflection chapter. So, and reflection in two ways, reflecting on myself, my thoughts, what I need, but also reflecting back to others, what's there or what's not there. You know, I did a workshop for a client. There were 20,000 people there. And the conversation I had with the CEO is, he said, Wade, what did you hear? And I told him, and I said, and then he said, what didn't you hear? And it was the loudness of the audience, their fears, their, you know, going from point A to point B, how they were going to take all the successful stories that they were hearing during that workshop and apply it to their lives. So I think I'm in this reflection chapter of my life to make sure that now that I have more time to think, where I'm not out of my house 50 hours a week, how can I take that reflection and then use it in these places where my clients stick me and say, I need you in this workshop, or I need you to illustrate this thing. So, and I love it. It's funny, I was a talkie-talkie consultant for years, and now I'm a professional listener. I mean, I feel like I'm in heaven. I'm happier than I've ever been. Yeah, so thank you. What's your chapter? I'm going to flip the script and ask you a question.
Yeah, I think my chapter is appreciation, you know, right now. I'm at a very grateful part of my life. You know, running a company and it changes, it evolves, there's struggle, certainly in personal life, you know, in your personal life, there's struggles, there's loss and grief, there's things with relationships that don't work out. And I think I've landed at a place right now where I have an incredible relationship, great support, and then the people I work with, and the how we've morphed and changed throughout the pandemic and after it, and the seeds of it were there, but how our team has come together and you know, the incredible people I get to work with, like, have really changed how I feel about work and how I, the confidence I have about it. For me, I think it's just a real, you know, it might be the age I'm at, it might just be luck and circumstance, but yeah, I think gratitude right now is where I'm at. That's how I feel most of the time.
It's probably not an accident that you meditate regularly if gratitude is coming to the top when somebody asks you that question.
Probably not. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think it's just it's a really great place to be because it certainly hasn't been where I've always been, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there are times where you're like really trying to accomplish, or you're really working hard to get someplace, or you're struggling with conflict with people for some reason. And this has just been a season of gratitude. Then I think that's come from the pandemic, and also just from how lucky I've been to get certain people in my life.
And I think maybe the goal at times is, I feel like before the pandemic, we were in a season that was time bound. And now my reflection season, I think, is, like I said earlier, is going on like 1400 days. And I'm not trying to write the end of that chapter yet. I kind of want to see where it's going to go. So it's interesting that you say gratitude and surrounding yourself around people. I mean, that was something that I struggled with in the defense contracting community, because in the contract world, you're on a contract for a period of performance, and then everybody spreads to the wind and you lose some of that team chemistry and those relationships and friendships. But you're describing where you get to see people grow during these life events, and that's, you can't put a price on that. So I'm really happy you have that.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, just the support we have or the way everyone pulls together for this podcast alone is just one example. It's just an amazing group of people, and I'm so fortunate to even be around them. And one of the things that I think is so cool is that, you know, there are just different seasons that we all go through. That's why I love asking, I ask every guest what chapter they're in right now. And there's just different chapters we're in. And I think that pre-pandemic chapter, and then all of us going through that, I think whether people think about it or not, we all went through a lot of change, you know? So we had physical changes, we had psychological changes, we all kind of suffered some loss, sort of the loss of way things were. That's a real loss. So everyone's traveled through it, and I think we're all in a different place, and we're all trying to figure out where we are now. So I think it's a really, just a really cool thing everyone's going through. You know, I'm grateful for it. It sounds crazy to be grateful for the pandemic, but it taught me a lot. So if you could give your younger self any advice, what would you go back and tell yourself, knowing what you know now?
Oh, I know the answer to this right away. I delayed my time becoming an artist because I listened to a lot of people who were not artists. And I think we can all reach back to our younger selves and see that we had a desire to do something. And in those pivotal moments and transitions, somebody tried to influence that decision either in a really, really awesome way or in a not so productive way. And so I took this 20-year voyage away from my creative self because I believed that I had to be this productive male with insurance and a 401k and, you know, a salary that was predictable every 2 weeks to support my family. But I wasn't all there. I was stressed. I was worried. I was tired. I was getting 5 hours of sleep a night because I never wanted to go to bed because I always got home late. And I just wasn't who I needed to be. And then when I found my art, I work less than I've ever worked. I'm with my family more than I've ever been. I'm happier than I've ever been. And none of that is intuitive. So I think the answer to your question, I'm glad you asked, I would say, to these young people and even to the older folks that are still questioning, don't put too much stock in the people that aren't trying what you've tried or doing what you want to do, because you might get waylaid or detoured into a place that isn't worth being anymore. And so how about you? I got to ask you now because I'm very interested.
I would say, God, for my younger self, I think the answer I would give would be slow down, you know? For my younger self, because I tried to accomplish everything and do everything. And I think I missed a bunch of stuff. And I also like fell off of everything in the world. I went through my 20s as a bit of a daredevil. So now in my life, I wish I hadn't, you know, crashed on skis and rolled over ATVs on myself and fallen out of trees swinging on vines. I did some crazy stuff traveling the world, and like, but I was almost in like a rush to experience it all. So it's amazing how you can want to go experience everything, but you miss all of it because you're in a hurry to experience it. It's quite a paradox.
Yeah, I think we are conflicted. Ryan Holiday's book, Stillness is the Key. The slower I get, Steve, the happier I get. You know, the more beneficial our business becomes to the clients because they get that version of us that shows up that they want. Nobody teaches that.
No, you have to learn it by trial and error, don't you?
Oh, yeah. And I love what you're saying about squeezing it all in. I mean, I used to think that if I was successful, I was traveling the world. And now I realize if I'm successful, I have time to be in the moment that I'm in. And so it's interesting. You and I have similar, I mean, I think people tell people to go travel the world if they're searching for something, and you can travel, but you don't have to travel endlessly to find it.
You really don't. And sometimes you don't have to travel at all. You know, you can, and travel is really cool, but with the right mindset. And I think, you know, it's kind of like that wherever you go, there you are, you know, kind of saying. And, you know, travel can be really rich, but so can just sit on a bench with a friend and talk or watch your dog play or any of those kind of experience if you're really there. You know, I think that's what it's all about, is trying to be truly present in our lives.
For you to be able to do that for your team and for your clients, I mean, that's a big deal. And that's kind of how I feel. I don't feel like I need the most sophisticated, you know, social media and everything else. I just need to be myself and do my daily practice. And I'm fortunate that what I do for daily self-care, I can share. But when you can slow people down and get the best version of them and have that really unique and kind and loving exchange, and put a price on that. If it happens over and over again, keep doing it, because you got to hold on to that while you can and not wait for the other shoe to fall, like I mentioned earlier.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to tie that into what we do very briefly, and then I'll let you go, is it's a lot like what you do too, is that, you know, there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of selling, but there's a real craving for authenticity. And you don't get to real authenticity by rushing and trying to get a message in front of everyone all the time. So even with our clients, what we're always trying to encourage them to do is be real and be human and communicate with emotion. And honestly, if you want marketing or brand communications to work, then you're going to have to be more human, more patient, more real, more authentic in this day and age. So, you know, I kind of feel like it came full circle for us because we've always been saying this, and people were like, no, I don't like that. That's, you know what I mean? I just want to push more. I want to sell more and push more, but that's not what works anymore.
If you're lucky, the people that you're trying to get the attention of are really tuned in, and they're going to hear that noise real fast versus the real stories that you're talking about.
I think people are thirsty for them. So when a real story or some quality content, quality content isn't just clever or shiny, it's real. You know, so for instance, to bring it full circle, your content. Anyone listening, go look at Wade's drawings. Instantly, you will know how authentic they are. And that's probably why you stopped and looked at them. That's why I think everyone does. So that's the difference. I think that's the sort of the intersection of art and marketing and art and advertising, is when it's real, we all know it and we stop. When it's kind of a fake out or it's kind of just a bunch of flash, I don't think it lasts in anyone's memory. And if you want to move people, if you want to persuade people, you better be real. Thank you so much for being here today, man. This was great. I had a great time.
I needed this, Steve. You know, I'm deeply sad at the loss of my dad, but for him to hear me talking about art and what I'm doing in the world right now is like a great gift that you gave me. So thank you. I really needed this today, and I hope other people that are going through it and that we can connect with on grief know that it's just being that in tune matters. So thank you for giving me this gift this afternoon.
Want to hear more inspiring stories? Subscribe on your preferred podcast app so you don't miss an episode. And if you like what we're doing, please rate, review, and share. It's the best way to support us. Thank you for listening to Brand Story.